Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's December 8th, 2017 program. Measure 101, sales tax, quote, on health care or, quote, provider tax paid by hospitals and insurance companies. During the 2017 Oregon legislative session, the legislators passed a new bill. I have a copy of it here. It's 26 pages long with very small type. Some say what it does is put on assessments. Some say it puts on taxes on some hospitals and insurance companies to help pay for the Oregon health plan. Oregon Representatives Julie Parrish, Saul Esquivel, and Cedric Hayden succeeded in placing a referendum for a public vote to repeal this legislation. It'll be on the ballot for a public vote, as I said, on the 23rd of January, 2018, special election. A yes vote on the measure will help to retain the current Medicaid funding. And we're very fortunate today to have two Oregon House of Representatives members with us today to really explain this, and they will be speaking on opposing sides of the measure. We're not doing this as an official debate. We just want to hear from both sides, and then there'll be plenty of time for questions, Q&A, and so if they haven't covered anything there, you can draw more information out during the Q&A period. So this is the 13th program of our 2017-18 programming year. I'm Sandra Bishop, City Club President. The club brings together civic-minded people to make Eugene a better place to live, work, and play. We are a member-supported nonprofit. Our members have a direct influence on public policy, or so we hope. If you're not a member, go to cityclubofeugene.org. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including AARP of Oregon, Movasagi Plastic Surgery and Ziba Medical Spa, Evans, Elder, Brown, and Subert Commercial Real Estate, and one of our Sapphire sponsors, George Brody Repair Shops, providing car care with a conscience, with three repair locations in Eugene: Euro-Asian Automotive, Stadium Automotive, and Auto House. Our online, they can be reached at eugenerepairs.com. And special thanks to Pack Info Solutions, one of our in-kind sponsors, and to KLCC Radio. City Club programs are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 at 6:30 on Monday following the Friday program. The coordinators for today's program are Marty Wilde and Joel Korn, and we'd like to thank Marty and Joel for organizing this important discussion. Thank you. And now I'd like to turn it over to Joel Korn to introduce our speakers.
January 23rd, that's the date of the election on Oregon Measure 101. The ballot measure reads to approve temporary assessments to fund health care for low-income individuals and families and to stabilize health insurance premiums. Temporary assessments on insurance companies, some hospitals, and other providers of insurance or health care coverage insurers may not increase rates on health insurance premiums by more than 1.5% as a result of these assessments. If you vote yes, that approves the temporary assessment on these insurance companies, some hospitals, public employees benefits board, and managed care organizations. If you vote no, you will reject those temporary assessments. You're voting to reject those temporary assessments. In doing research for my introduction today, I found out that the two speakers are fascinating individuals with very varied backgrounds. Representative Dan Rayfield will speak first in favor of a yes vote on the proposition. Dan grew up in a house where he describes his mother was an activist and a small business owner that reveled in dragging her young and often unwilling son to events promoting progressive causes. My father, on the other hand, was a former colonel in the Air Force Reserve and a senior vice president of a commercial insurance company. Needless to say, they had entirely different perspectives on life and politics. This dynamic forced me quickly to rationalize how two good people could have two vastly different outlooks in life. He went to Western Oregon University and Willamette University College of Law, and as an attorney represents individuals with consumer and civil rights cases against large corporations and insurance companies. He's fighting for the little guy while maintaining a fiscally sound business that has given great satisfaction to him. Representative Cedric Hayden, as you heard, was one of the people who worked to get this ballot measure on to the ballot for January. He grew up in rural Fall Creek, Oregon, member of what is now a sixth generation covered wagon pioneer family. In fact, his great-grandmother was the first female mayor of Burns, Oregon. He went to Walla Walla University for his undergraduate degree and the University of Missouri, Kansas City School of Dentistry. Upon graduating, he joined the family dental practice, and in between 1994 and 2009, he created Oregon's first statewide oral health network, together with his brothers, providing dental service in 35 out of the 36 counties in Oregon. He's an outdoorsman, and in case you wondered what a real outdoorsman does, he completed the world's seven summits and Grand Slam by summiting the highest mountain in each of the seven continents and skiing the North and South Poles. I sit in front of a television and watch football games. In 2007, Cedric founded Caring Hands Worldwide, an international public health charity for the uninsured and poverty-stricken. And listening to these two gentlemen talk at the table, they talk about issues, they get together, they get along. They will get things done. Dan, you want to speak first?
All right, I am told I have 15 minutes. So thank you guys, I'm happy to be here today. My name is Dan Rayfield, as was said. I am the state representative from the Corvallis area. I apologize, I am not a beaver, just so you know. I actually am a Western wolf, if you listen to the bio, so it's okay, you can like me. My role in the legislature is I serve on budget committees. One of the budget committees that I co-chair, actually, and sit with good Representative Hayden, we developed the budget for the Oregon Health Authority, and I was a part of the process to help develop the plan that all of you will be voting on in January 23rd. However, my role here today is a little different. Today, I'm here representing more than 120 organizations that are urging a yes vote on Measure 101 because they realize this is the only option about how we're going to protect Medicaid here in Oregon. And I want to talk a little bit about this coalition because this coalition is a bunch of organizations that you know, you trust, we've all been around. All of them have vetted these ideas. All of them have listened to the opposing arguments and have agreed that a yes vote on Measure 101 is where we need to go. Specifically, we have Oregon AARP, representing seniors, that has vetted this program that I'm on behalf representing. Children First for Oregon. We have the Oregon Nurses Association, the Oregon Medical Association, the Oregon Dental Association. We have labor groups like SEIU, AFSCME. We have the Oregon Hospitals, Disability Rights Oregon. We have consumer groups, think OSPR, different entities like that. All of these groups have come together, looked at the arguments, and are on board supporting them. And I'm here as a representative of all of these organizations. The other component that we have is we have bipartisan support on the Yes campaign for Measure 101. During the legislature, it was bipartisan as it passed. It had to be because we needed three-fifths votes. As we get into the campaign season, we have the former minority leader for the Senate, a Republican, Ted Ferrioli, and the Senate president, a Democrat, who came together to write a voter's pamphlet statement in support of Measure 101. We have the new minority leader, Republican, of the House, the Senate caucus, Jackie Winters, in support. And most recently, Senator Alan DeBoer from Southern Oregon, a conservative area, is now in support of Measure 101. And the quote that he said was, "Without it, the state will be in trouble." And quite frankly, he's right. And that is why all of these organizations have come together to support Measure 101, because Measure 101 protects, and this is it, 1 in 4 Oregonians' health care. And that includes 400,000 Oregon children. Collectively, this group of individuals and organizations, we believe that no matter who you are, where you live, what you do for a living, you should have access to health care. In Measure 101, what it does is it holds costs down, and at the same time, it's an important step, a funding piece, to ensure that we have health care for everyone here in Oregon. And when we came into the session, all of us shared this common goal. Representative Hayden and myself shared this same common goal, to make sure that everybody has health care. And there's certain stories that motivate us, and now that this campaign is moving along, we hear more stories that come out of the woodwork. One of the more recent stories is a girl named Sophie, and she is actually, goes to University of Oregon. And she came down, and when she came here, she does what most college students do. They ask their parents to help them move in. And her dad, who was 63, came down and helped her move into her college dorm. At the end of the day, her dad was somebody that started having back pain and neck pain. And first thing that pops into Sophia's mind is, the last time I went to the ER was $4,000. The interesting thing here was Sophia's dad was somebody that was 63, so he didn't qualify for Medicare. He didn't actually have enough income to qualify for Medicaid. So he was a part of this expansion population. He was one of those people that we added on. And he was fortunate enough to go to the doctor. When he went to the doctor, the doctors diagnosed him with a spinal infection, a spinal cord infection. And they said within 24 hours he could have died had he not come in. And he was very fortunate to get that treatment to help him move on in life. And that was because he was one of these expansion population. And very fortunate. And Sophia talks very personally about how this could have impacted their family. Because you shouldn't have to, when you need to get a doctor, when you need to go to the hospital, when you need to get the medication, you shouldn't ever be under the threat of bankruptcy. And she talks very personally about that, about how as a family you have to come together. Sometimes you have to pull out of school. And so they were very fortunate under these circumstances. And it's stories like these, and there's countless. Representative Hayden and I can sit here and talk about all these different stories that we hear sitting on our committee about what was this motivation for us to come together. And so, with these stories in mind, we got into the session. We were facing a $900 million shortfall in healthcare. And the first thing that we did was we wanted to use our money more efficiently. So we trimmed the budget, and we kind of cut some of the excess within that budget, which really defined what this hole we were trying to do. That was our first step. And Representative Hayden and I, and there were several others, a bipartisan group, sat together and did this. From there, what we worked together with stakeholders was to develop a 1.5% assessment on insurance carriers and CCOs, as well as a 0.7% assessment on hospitals, to then fund this gap, okay, to then make sure that everybody has health care. And all of these entities, while they're the ones paying it, they came together and said, yes, we're in support of this plan, because they're on the ground seeing the impacts in the event that something like this does not pass, because we've been there. And so these assessments were then passed through the legislature, and it's important to note that these assessments are things that we've been using since 2004 to fund our Medicaid program here in Oregon. In fact, in 2009, we passed an almost identical assessment, a 1%, on insurance plans to fund healthcare for children in Oregon. And that was before the expansion program. And so the other thing important to note is that 49 states use these type of assessments to fund their healthcare systems in Oregon. And the reason we do it is because it helps us pull down federal dollars. And so this is a very tried and true method of doing it. It was one of the reasons we were able to come to bipartisan agreement in the legislature. So after the gavel drops, the session's over, we have Medicaid members, doctors, dentists, everybody kind of comes together, and we all think that we have now protected health care here in Oregon. But that wasn't the case. What ended up happening was some fringe groups on the outside came together and supported these elements to refer this certain elements of our package to the voters. And that's why we're here today. So what does Measure 101 do? Now that I've given you the context, I want to read the ballot title again, and so that way you can kind of process it one more time, because when you read it out loud, it's a little bit difficult. So Measure 1, according to the official ballot title, approves temporary assessments to fund health care for low-income individuals and families and to stabilize health insurance premiums. Temporary assessments on insurance companies, some hospitals, and other providers of insurance or health care coverage. Now, the result of a no vote, according to the voters' the ballot title. Assessments are currently budgeted to fund health care for low-income individuals and families and individuals with disabilities and for stabilizing the cost of insurance premiums. A result of a no vote would underfund these budgeted costs. On the Secretary of State's website, if you want to look at the gravity of this decision that you're making, the fiscal estimate is $320 million in what we would call state funds. And to kind of get you back into the Medicaid space, Medicaid is a partnership with the federal government. And so for every dollar we spend as a state, the federal government matches it. Okay, so what we then talk about is total funds. This ballot measure could risk up to $1.3 billion of what we would call total funds that helps us provide these health care benefits here in Oregon. Now, if it passes, the plan goes forward as we intended, and this is what helps fund our Medicaid system. And to dig into that, think children, think seniors, think people with disabilities, and think working families. Now, the one point that we don't talk about and doesn't get a lot of press because it's a bit wonky is that this funding package also included a program called reinsurance. And this is something that helps stabilize insurance premiums. And this is, when you think about insurance premiums on the individual market, think about people who don't qualify for Medicaid, but at the same time are receiving subsidies from the federal government because they don't make enough money to buy health insurance. For families like this, on average, and these numbers are concrete, they are averaging about $300 decrease a year as we stabilize this individual market. Now, what happens if this doesn't pass? The state is most certainly going to face some serious cuts, and we're going to have to make some difficult decisions. As we get into the February legislative session, we'll be 13 days past an election, and we literally create lists of what are the levers to pull to match up our budget, because it has to be balanced. The type of things, when you're talking about big ticket items, you can't make administrative changes and get a little bit here and there. You need large chunks of money when you're talking about $320 million. The things that have been on lists and will be on lists are cutting the expansion population, cutting benefits, think prescription drug coverage, dental coverage, addictions, mental health treatment. These are the type of things that we have to then prioritize in extremely difficult decisions. For a lot of folks here, you might remember in 2003, where this had actually happened before. Well, we had a shortfall, and we came through the same process. Things got referred to the voters, a revenue mechanism. The folks supporting that revenue mechanism say, don't worry, the state will find the money. They were successful in their campaign. They went off to their next campaign and started working on that. Unfortunately, the state had to come back. But the result was we cut 100,000 people off of Medicaid and eventually wound up in a Medicaid lottery system where people were waiting when they would go to their mailbox, looking at their mailbox, dreading that they might have that slip in the mail that they were being cut from Medicaid. These things have happened in the future. Measure 101 is basically an essential funding piece so that we don't wind it back up there. And we've come a long way from there. So another important element of Measure 101 is its accountability piece. And this is another reason why you have more than 120 organizations supporting this. Measure 101, the money from that goes into what we call the Health Services Fund at the State Treasury. The law is explicit and detailed that the money that goes into that fund must provide our health care here in Oregon. And that is another reason, like I said, that you have this broad support for this common value of providing health care. So kind of in closing, Oregonians deserve health care, and they deserve to know that their health care is going to be stable for the next 2 years and isn't subject to political whims. Health care should be a right, and it shouldn't be a privilege for just a select few. Your income shouldn't determine whether you're able to see a doctor, get your medication, or go to the hospital. You shouldn't have to worry about bankruptcy when it comes to your health care. Measure 101 is basically the only option to continue health care funding for the most vulnerable in our state. It's the only option for affordable, accessible health care, and that's why, again, all of these 120 organizations who have vetted both sides are supporting this. And it's also why you only have a small group of fringe people on the outside opposing this measure. So if you want to get more information about this, you can find more information in the ballot title. You can get the fiscal impact statement. You can sign up to volunteer on the website yesforhealthcare.org. And working together, hopefully on January 23rd, this measure will pass, and we'll be able to provide that stability for everyone on our Medicaid system as we continue to go forward with that common shared vision that everyone in Oregon should have health care. So again, I would urge your yes support. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I'm Senator Caden, State Representative, House District 7. That is East Lane County and part of Douglas County. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. Well, wow, pretty good presentation. Those lawyers really know how to speak, don't they? They have years and years of practice. Me, I'm just kind of a quiet guy that crunches a lot of numbers that does low-income health care. I'm actually somebody that provides low-income health care. Been providing low-income health care for almost 25 years now in the state of Oregon. As mentioned in the introductory, my brothers and my family and I were the first ones to tackle the issue of how do you get low-income health care, specifically in oral health, to rural Oregon. That was a big challenge. Before we were able to put an organization together that cracked that, you had some very spotty coverage for oral health in eastern Oregon, and you had the I-5 corridor. So we spent 15 years putting that system together. It was successful. It still survives today, and it happens to be the largest oral health network in the state of Oregon that covers now all 36 counties. We missed one in those 15 years, but we got there. Some of my background, as was mentioned, I graduated from dental school in 1994, came out to Oregon, where I was originally from, joined my brothers, my fathers. We set about tackling the issue that we talked about, getting low income and safety net healthcare needs out to Oregonians. And through that process, I was able to learn the organizations and the individuals and the people that fall through the cracks in our network. In 2007, I worked with my family and my wife and the IRS to set up a 501(c). In 2009, we got that organization to be legitimized, and now we have three international locations, Federated States of Micronesia, Zambia, and Madagascar, where we run clinics for people that can't afford health care. We're setting one up in Mongolia as we speak, and we run these clinics routinely year-round in the state of Oregon. I was just down in Roseburg, joined with the Umpqua Community College to provide free dental care for the veterans there that go to that school. We did have a couple of extra availabilities for veterans to come in, so we brought some of them in from the community to fill that space. The neat thing about that program was they have a hygiene or a dental assisting program there, so we had 20 students that were able to get hands-on care of actually doing dentistry. We had a local dentist come in, we had two local hygienists come in, and this big group of people providing services for those that don't have service. So that's really, in a nutshell, what my life is about. My professional career has been about it, and I continue to do that as a provider. For 15 years, I served as a medical dental director with the state of Oregon through the Oregon Health Plan. It used to be called Welfare, then it got called DMAP, and then it got called OHP, and now it's called the ACA. So there's been about four generations of that. I've been with that process the entire time. I spent 3 years on committees, different committees, helping to set and organize the coordinated care organizations. I'm a strong supporter of the coordinated care organizations and have been working to make them more efficient as we go forward. They've about 5 years. So why is a strong supporter of Medicaid function in Oregon standing up here and saying, hey, we missed the boat? That's a very strange question. I get that asked all the time. Why are you on the side of this? You just heard all the organizations that were presented that supported this. I was one of the members of the Gang of Six that sat in the room with Representative Rayfield. I sit on the Ways and Means Joint Committee for Human Services, which is the budgetary committee. I'm also the vice chair of Human Services Health in House Health Care with Mitch Greenlake. And so every step, policy, budget, basically Rayfield and I walked through this process. And about 90% of what he presented for you today here is correct. And 5 to 10% of that, I have a different perspective on it. What Representative Rayfield presented to you was actually House Bill 2391. House Bill 2391 is 26 pages. 26 pages of a funding mechanism to fund the standard Medicaid system, which I support, 26 pages to fund the expanded Medicaid system, which I support. And keep in mind, I'm here in Lane County. I am your only Republican elected official in Lane County, and I appreciate the opportunity to come give a different view. But I want to repeat that again. About 90 to 95% of what we're talking about, Representative Rayfield and I, is exactly the same. I support House Bill 2391. I support the funding mechanism over the last 20 years that has gotten to us where we're at today. So, why the referendum? In the present or in the introduction today, the referendum mentioned repealing House Bill 2391. I want to correct that statement. The referendum repeals five sections of House Bill 2391, which are not the funding mechanism that we have used traditionally to fund Medicaid. Those are items that have been stacked on top of the traditional funding mechanism that we use, the assessment. Rayfield, Representative Rayfield mentioned the funding mechanism is an assessment piece that has been here historically that we use. Now they have done a little trick of words on these new things that have been stacked on top of it. A 0.7 assessment is different. We call it a tax. A 0.7 assessment is different than the 5.3 assessment that we've done for those hospitals, which is the engine that funds Medicaid. There is an engine that funds Medicaid. It comes from our diagnostic-related group hospitals, what we call our DRG hospitals. The Affordable Care Act allows us to assess those hospitals up to 6% of their revenue that comes in, and the federal government matches that money, and a lot of that money comes back to the state of Oregon, and it funds our Medicaid system. We have the flexibility to add to our 28 DRG hospitals in the state of Oregon, 32 AMB hospitals in the state of Oregon to that assessment mechanism. House Bill 2391 adds those AMB hospitals to it. So now we've got 60 hospitals that are contributing under the true assessment, which means that they provide the money, goes to the federal government. The federal government will match these funds up to the amount of caseload that we have for these people that need to be taken care of. That's an important distinction that I just said here. The federal government takes the assessment from the DRG hospitals, and under House Bill 2391, which I support with a few exceptions, adds the A&B hospitals to that assessment, adds another $100 million for the A&B hospitals, roughly. We're not going to get exact figures here because it gets very complicated. To that assessment system, it sends it to the federal government, they match it up, and that's the system that funds the expanded or the 300 to 350,000 members. I support all of that. So what don't I support? Why am I referring this? Historically, the Medicaid funding coming from the hospitals assessments that they talk about are true assessments. What that means is when they contribute the funds and we send it to the federal government and the federal government sends the money back, those people, those hospitals, those now 60 hospitals, as this goes forward, whether or not the referendum, whether you vote yes or whether you vote no, that hospital assessment is going forward because we did not refer that assessment on the A and B hospitals. We did not refer the 1332 waiver, which is the reinsurance program, which you've heard those things will fail. So those things, you gotta take and put in your mind what's really happening here. Is it the engine that funds Medicaid that's being referred, or is it the policy shift? I wanna talk about the policy shift. The policy that we have in the state of Oregon, we have had in the state of Oregon, is that funds that go to Medicaid get locked in Medicaid or healthcare funding. The federal government locks those in because when we send $1 billion, and it's more than that, but we'll just use $1 billion for example. We send them $1 billion, they send us back $4 billion, but only if we have the patients there, right? Only if the caseload. So over the last 20 years, Oregon has done a really good job, in my perspective, of working to get people on this system, because Oregon gets rewarded, the people that deserve this care get rewarded, and the federal government will pay for that. What has happened is we've had some really tough technology problems going forward. We've had some accountability problems. We've had some directors, though, that haven't been transparent. And so the funds that have gone to that have been traditionally locked away, and they've got a couple hundred million dollars that you're hearing about now that are being questioned by the Secretary of State, by the new director, Patrick Allen, whether those funds are going to be recouped by the federal government because the coordinated care organizations have received hundreds of millions of dollars erroneously. That is what we're after fixing. And the new policy shift that stacks this 0.7%, which could have been part of the true assessment, that's roughly $100 million. If we go from the 5.3 to the 6 cap under the ACA, that is an additional $100 million. If you do it the way we proposed and the way we've traditionally done it, send it to the government, government sends it back, says you gotta use it for Medicaid. If you do it the way that is proposed under House Bill 23, or House Bill 2391, under several of these sections, 3, 5, 8, 9, and 27, it creates that 0.7% as a true tax. That means, which is verified by the Legislative Council, Dexter Johnson, that that money can go to anything in the general fund. It can be spent on anything they want. It is no longer locked into Medicaid. That is the policy shift that I am opposing, because only about two-thirds of our services are required by the federal government, your physical health, your hospital health, but as soon as you let SEIU, you let special interest come in and say, if you reduce those caseloads, we get the delta in between. We get a sweep money out of Medicaid, but we can only do it if there's a true tax. That's what this true tax is about. They're stacking a true tax on top of the Medicaid funding engine. I support the Medicaid funding engine, but you will see pressure for them to eliminate adult dental. You will see pressure for them to eliminate chronic mental health services, services that are adjunct to what the federal government requires when you have pressure from the general fund to take those funds. We have never allowed that policy. I think I'm getting close to time here. 2 minutes. We have never allowed, in all of the years of funding Medicaid, we have never allowed a back door to get those dollars out for different purposes. That should scare the physicians, the healthcare providers. because you all of a sudden have all these groups. Why do you have 60, 200 groups saying, hey, we want this, that don't have anything really to do with healthcare now? New groups showing up all over. Because the funding mechanism that has been stacked on top of this allows funds to come from Medicaid to go to the general fund. We have handouts. We only brought 15. I have that in writing from the Legislative Council. It's a five-page, very lawyered response. It's in there. The other big point that I want to make, nobody will lose health care. Whether or not you vote yes or you vote no, and I'm a no vote, I asked the Legislative Fiscal Office, how much money does the $5 billion that comes from the expanded ACA create in taxes, state and local taxes, for our state of Oregon? That $5 billion, according to the bipartisan legislative or nonpartisan legislative fiscal office that does our budgets, says that that brings in $536 million to our state. Our cost, our copay to make that expanded population process go forward, what we have to come up with is about 6%. So the money that we inject into those 350,000 people from the state coffers is less than the money by the industry, that $5 billion that comes from the expanded ACA. If you wipe those 350,000 people off healthcare coverage, we will have less money in the state of Oregon because we've wiped out $5 billion of industry than if we didn't do this tax at all. So the bottom line is, we cannot afford to let our people that need chronic mental health services, our people that need adult dental, our people that need a ride on the bus because, or a ride in a car because they have a disability, we cannot afford to let them compete with big lobby groups. Please vote no.
Thank you. Well, that gives us a lot to think about. This is a complicated issue, and we're so fortunate to have these two representatives here to help us sort it out today. So this is Sandra Bishop, City Club President. We're going to take a 5-minute break to formulate questions around the table and then return with audience questions. Remember, only City Club members are allowed to ask questions at the microphone. See you after the break.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Welcome back to the December 8th City Club program. Measure 101, the healthcare assessment or tax, depending on your point of view. City Club is a nonprofit organization. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including AARP of Oregon, Movasagi Plastic Surgery and Zeba Medical Spa, Evans, Elder, Brown and Subert Commercial Real Estate, George Rohde Auto Repair Shops. And special thanks to some of our in-kind sponsors, University of Oregon Academic Extension for our meeting place here at the U of O Baker Center, Dot Dotson's Photography, and KRVM 91.9 Radio. Before we go to member questions, please remember, this is a very hot topic. We're going to have a lot of questions, so please keep your questions short and to the point. Now for our first questioner, Paul. Our first member question.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming today. It's very timely. So this question is from one of our guests today, so I'm being a surrogate here for that. It's a question that has to do with the relationship of 101 to House Bill 2391. 2391 is law now, and it's 26 pages long. The resolution that we're going to be voting on potentially relates to only a portion of that. And we'd like to have both of you respond to what is, if does 101 repeal all of HB 2391? If it does not, what portion does it repeal? And why did you only zero in on that portion include in 101?
We might be here in an hour with the explanation.
In a couple of minutes, but this is
it's complicated.
So we strategized on how to answer this. So I'm going to talk factually a little bit about the components and then why I support them. And then Representative Hayden will talk about why he isolated those to have in the measure. There's two components of 2391 that are in Measure 101. A lot of numbers there. So I'll just tell you what Measure 101 is very specifically. A 1.5% assessment on insurance companies and coordinated care organizations, okay? And that funds part of the gap, and this is funding that's necessary, right, to fund healthcare. That funds part of the gap to provide Medicaid. Then you have a 0.7% assessment on hospitals. And that is the other component for a part of the year that is in Measure 101 that you would be voting for. And again, that 0.7% helps fund our Medicaid program, and we rely upon that to make sure. Without those funding, we lose, as we were talking about $320 million in state funds, right? And so the question is, and then if you think total funds, up to $1.3 billion. And so you think about, okay, if we lose that money, where does that come from? That's one of the big differences here. I believe we need the money to provide health care. I believe that that is essential for our budget. And that is why I am in support of this, because I believe we need the money to continue going forward.
That was Representative Dan Rayfield for the radio audience.
So I'm Representative Cedric Hayden. So what a lot of people think the referendum is a referendum on House Bill 2391, which we've heard time and time again here. That's 26 pages. Here is what we're referring, two pages out of 26 pages. So keep in mind the scope when I talk about 5% difference in what Representative Rayfield and I are talking about. And there are different ways to get that. So Section 3, I'll just run down through the list and I'll do this as quickly as I can. Section 3 is a tax on public employees on their health care insurance. So we tax our own public employees, healthcare insurance, there's a 1.5% on a portion of them, which all comes from state taxes. So there's no gain there. So why are we taxing public employees? Section 5 is a 1.5% tax on about 1 million Oregonians that do the right thing and go buy their own health insurance out of their own pocket, and they pay full rate for that. Keep in mind that Section 5 specifically cut out large corporations, cut out large unions, and cut out the insurance companies themselves, which is another 1 million people that have health insurance, but they were the ones that were in the room that were writing this legislation, and they cut themselves out. That is not fair. Section 8 says specifically that those insurance companies that cut themselves out can specifically, in statute, pass that to the ratepayer. In statute, can pass that to the ratepayer. We had to give them $50 million to do that to the ratepayers in a separate bill. Section 9, which is the 1.5% MCO tax, the federal government gives us money, we give it to CCOs, it's all federal tax base. This is saying that we can then give them money again and get money matched again. The federal government calls that recycling, and they have rejected other states' plans to do that. So I don't believe that Section 9 can even be matched. And Section 27 is the hospital, the 0.7%. Keep in mind, both the 1.5% and the 7% could be done in true assessment. There's enough headroom in true assessment the way we do it now, and lock it away from Medicaid and not allow it to be fungible to general fund. So that's the alternative.
Great. Thank you for the comprehensive answer. Thank you. Go ahead.
Mike Rose, City Club member. As we look at this whole issue, it seems to me we're trying to take into account a lot of unknowables at this point. And that's frightening to me when we make decisions. Particularly it has to do with the national politics. And we know there's a great attempt by the current administration to eliminate the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid and other programs. Now, should we be taking that into consideration and the possible consequences of funding if the current measure is repealed? Should that be part of the equation?
I think there's no question that
Representative.
Right now, Representative Dan Rayfield, thank you. I think there's no question right now that, you know, when you look in the national context, we have Medicare and Medicaid are under attack, and it's no different with this measure. Like I said, I personally believe that this is essential funding for our healthcare system. Without this funding, we're going to have to make very difficult decisions. And so I do believe that this is critically important as we look at this as it blends together with what goes on in the federal level. These are temporary assessments. And so one of the things that we know is that there's a lot of uncertainty in the federal government. And so these are things that we're going to have to come back to. The one collective value, that I think we all share probably in this room, and the collective vision that many Oregonians have, is that every Oregonian deserves to have affordable health care. And that's what we're really working towards, no matter what session that we're in. And we should be proud here in Oregon that we're able to have assessments like Measure 101 that guarantees health care for everyone.
Thank you.
Jerry Smith, City Club member. Without affordable health care, our population of homeless people is growing. It's growing now. The paper last night said this year we had a 14% increase. Please, when you further talk about this, point out that if you go bankrupt in the middle class or the working class, you will be homeless. And those people who have no income as a result of current employment policies are homeless. And it affects not only adults, but our superintendent of schools said 10% of all the children in Lane County are homeless now.
And Jerry, is there a question in there?
Yes, I did. I said, okay. Oh, I want people to please use the word homeless when you're talking about it. It has disappeared. My favorite people, Hillary and Sanders, never once said homeless. It's a critical major problem. And more than anything else, medical bankruptcy contributes to homelessness.
Thank you, Jim.
So thank you for the question. Again, Senator Caden, State Representative, House District 7. I'll take that one to start with, and maybe Representative Rayfield wants to follow up here. We're kind of switching off to try and get as many questions as possible. So if you specifically want both of us to answer it, that's fine. One of the things that we do under our coordinated care system is called community benefit. We spend over $500 million in community benefit. Those are things that our CCOs go out and they provide adjunct services, which I talked about, the federally mandated physical health, hospital health, where you have acute mental health federally mandated, but the chronic mental health, the homelessness, the sobering centers, the adult oral health care. We spend billions of dollars across the state through our Medicaid system on these people. And those services are locked into, right now, your physicians, your nurses, your nurse practitioners, your hospitals, they all kind of carve out that healthcare pot of money, but it has to stay in healthcare. My concern with the referendum is it would be the first time we have a policy shift that allows those dollars to go to a different purpose. It doesn't keep them locked away, even though we have a fancy name for it. It would no longer be constitutionally protected, and it would hurt those homeless populations that we try and help through our community benefit.
And just really briefly, I didn't see where you walked. I think we should use the term homeless because that is encompassed in our Medicaid population. And with this funding is gone, it does threaten that population and their health care, as well as the children and that are impacted by this as well, because we have a lot of homeless children here in Oregon. It's part of the reason, and you mentioned the superintendent, which part of the reason the Oregon School Boards Association, a nonpartisan group across Oregon, is supporting this. It's also why the Oregon Education is supporting it, because they see how the impact on children, the lack of health care, 400,000 children in Oregon are on the Medicaid program, and how that impacts the learning in schools as well.
Robin Fletcher, and my table was wondering how, you've both used the word temporary about this, how temporary is temporary? What do we mean by temporary?
I can fill in a little bit here and say that we only have about 6 more minutes to complete our question. So,
so Dan Rayfield, 2 years is temporary.
Representative Hayden, the problem with the 2-year sunset, we've never had that before. A 2-year sunset, unless that changes between now and the next time we calculate budgets, it puts between a $1.3 and a $1.5 billion budget hole in Medicaid, which an alternative plan did not do.
Okay, John Attic, City Club member since 2000 and something. My own personal experiences influenced this. I've had medical treatment, including hospitalization, in Canada and in Scotland, and never received a bill afterwards. And also, I notice among some of my medical friends in practice that they have one person who does nothing but handle the bills.
We really need to get to the questions, otherwise
you're
absolutely
correct.
Everyone's
I'm coming
sitting there
to it.
When we go off the air.
So what the question I have, consider the measure. What does this mean, do you think, for the bureaucracy and non-medical healthcare people that are going to be affected by this measure? Will this pay for the greater non-medical personnel, or will it lead to a reduction in the non-medical folks involved in medical practice today?
Good question. Thank you, John. You've stumped them.
Senator Caden here. So I was a little unclear on which personnel we're talking about. Are you talking about administrative people?
Yes, administrative people.
So, yes, okay. So the referendum has already made a big difference on the management in the Oregon Health Authority. You have seen, and I would take a little credit for that with our efforts, you have seen a change in director. You have seen a change in about 20 management personnel, and you have seen the exposure of erroneous billing and overpayments, about $200 million in our Medicaid system. You have seen eligibility checks for people that are utilizing this service. 47,000 of those people for up to the last 5 years were not eligible. That takes away services from somebody that should have been able to get it. So the referendum has been instrumental in bringing those things forward. So yeah, we're making a lot of administrative change already. Good changes.
Thank you.
Dina Will, City Club member. I came in knowing absolutely nothing about this. I did not learn about the problem from Representative Rayfield's talk on the yes side. I did learn about it from your talk. On this brochure, it says sales tax. All I've read in the papers, which didn't really teach me anything, is calling it a sales tax, which is complete death in this state for this referendum. If it's billed as a sales tax, it will lose. Anybody have a comment on why it's being called that?
Good question. Go ahead, please.
Senator Caden, State Representative, House 67 again. If you go back and all the committees that Rayfield and I were in together on the House floor, Rayfield himself and his myself, it was always called a tax, right? When you put a tax on a product, that is a sales tax. They wrote another bill very quickly, House Bill 229, I believe it was, 229, that changed the process move the election up for this if it were to become a process. They took the ballot measure writing ability away from the 7 Supreme Court judges that are nonpartisan. They gave them to a partisan group of legislators to write it, and they changed it from a tax, which it had been constantly referred to during this process, to an assessment.
Simply put, Dan Rayfield, it's not a sales tax. When you go to your doctor, you're not going to be taxed when you go to your doctor. When you go get your prescriptions, you're not going to be taxed. This is not. It is an assessment. That is not my language. This was reviewed by the Oregon Supreme Court nonpartisan judges that called this an assessment. And so that's not my language. I'd refer you to that Supreme Court holding. Thank you.
John Belcher, City Club member. We focus on that 0.7% that Cedric Caden is concerned that is fungible. Our question is, if this had not been referred and indeed this money was misused, the legislature would have the opportunity to change the law. Now that this has been referred, and let's assume it fails, does that failure limit the legislature's ability to change this because there's been a vote of the public?
Again, Senator Caden, no, the answer is no. The legislation, the legislature could do the assessment, the true assessment, the part that we fund Medicaid now, the engine that funds it, those figures can be changed without, it doesn't affect that.
That's not really my question.
Okay.
You're referring to the fact that this segment is fungible and you think it should be repealed. If
correct.
It's voted down, the voters have said it can't be changed. Can the legislature change it because there's been a vote of the public on that issue?
Yeah, the legislature would just simply add that 0.7 to the true hospital assessment that we use now, and the funds would come in. The only difference would be they would be mandated to go to Medicaid.
And this is Dan Rayfield. I believe that there's a difference of opinion about the fungibility of this. The language of the bill, explicit, clear, all monies coming in from this tax go into the health services fund. That is at the Treasury. That money must be spent on health care. And if you remember, we talked about accountability. It's a little bit goofy when we talk about this again because you are voting to accept what the legislature did. It would be a yes on 101. So I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't quite sure where you're going, but the yes means that you would be helping to support and fund Medicaid.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry we've run out of our time for questions. Before we thank our speakers today, there are a few quick announcements. Thank you to public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Monday at 6:30 p.m. following the Friday forum. And thank you to Community Television of Lane County, cable channel 29, for televising recent City Club programs. Next week, our Friday, December 15th program. Please join us for our annual Gifts to the City program. We have a special guest, Storm Kennedy, is going to act as our MC that day. And more details, we'll have about 10 speakers offering gifts to the city. For those of you who aren't familiar, it's kind of like if you had a wand and could make anything happen, what gift would you give to the city? And they're usually very insightful and quite humorous at times. So please join us for that wonderful program. Other details and information about other future programs and information about City Club can be found at cityclubofeugene.org. Now let's thank today's speakers, Representative Dan Rayfield and Representative Cedric Caden. Let's give them a big round of applause. Thank you. That concludes today's program.